Thank you, Bradfords. Oh my goodness, that's one of my favorite songs. Thank you, thank you. I love that. Love that. Those Beatles, they were something, weren't they? Us in junior high when they were on Ed Sullivan. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm really happy to be here with you this morning. It is the final day of our stewardship campaign, and we've had such a good sort of season of playfulness with our whole circus and our three rings and all the fun things that we've done. And we have added our final letter and our final theme for the campaign, which is creativity. And so that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. I'm looking at this gorgeous idea of having us get really, really clear about creativity as a very core message of what we teach in the science of mind. And I don't know that we think about it or talk about it quite like this very often. We typically do that rather subtly. And today I wanted to say that I really think that creativity is the very premise on which we stand. It is that way that we say, we are created in the image and likeness of that which created us, and that makes us creative beings. By the nature of just being humans, we have that way we reflect the creative power of God, and that in our very cells of our body and the intelligence that feeds our minds, in all of that is this creativity. So we teach the creative process. Yes, we do. And we teach the divine, the idea of the divine law, the way that things come into being, the ways in which we can learn to understand that and then use those principles in our own lives, in the choices that we make, in the way that we live our lives, and the ways that we show up, and all of that packaged together. So to be creative is really to just stand in the truth of who we are. And I know that sometimes when we talk about creativity, there are people who will say, I'm just not very creative. I didn't get that gene. And as if it has to do with whether or not you can paint a picture, or if you're a fine musician, or if you're a great crafter, or you like to do scrapbooking, all of those things that we consider parts of creativity. But it's so much more than that. And in fact, the reason it's so important for us to talk about it is because we are always creating things in our life, and thereby, once we acknowledge that, we can learn some tools that will help us to be creative in the ways in which we would like to flourish in our life. Because if you're not paying attention to that, you could be creating a lot of stuff you don't necessarily want to be living with in your life. So if high drama, for instance, we all just had a holiday that has a lot of funny jokes about family gatherings. You know, sometimes there's that high drama when you bring generations of family together, and some of us adult kids don't know how to not revert back to being a kid in front of our parents, right? So there stuff happens. So if we don't like it, we can make a choice to flourish in another way, in a positive direction, by choosing things that will then help us to have the opposite experience of whatever that is that we don't really want to dabble in. So the title of my message is The Rich Get Richer. And I thought that would be a clever title for the last day of the stewardship campaign. Typically, the rich get richer is, it's a catchphrase that has to do with economic equality, but that is not what we are using it, not the way in which we are using that idea this morning. The rich get richer actually plays on some of the parables in the Bible that Jesus spoke about, and so in a minute, I'll get to that, and I'm going to share one of those parables with you. But what we're really talking about in that phrase when we're looking at spirituality is the way that the saying is speaking to a mentality, a way of showing up, a consciousness that we can embody. And I would say that successful people seem to have an instinct for creating more success in their lives because there is something they understand about life. And it may not be an intellectual understanding of the creative process in the way that we teach that in religious science. It may have nothing to do with that, but it has everything to do with an instinct that they recognize within them that gives them a way to stand firmly in this ability to create more success in their life. And what we know then, and what that really says to me, is that it's not how smart you are or even how creative you can be, but it's more about knowing that it's the inner work. That everything starts in that, as Hella was saying so beautifully, that it, thank you, Hella. It was so fun to have you up here today. So you've only been here a year, and look at you shine. That there's that indwelling presence, that intelligence. There is no place that it is not. So we can tap into it from that place within us. And whenever we are managing to do that, what the consequences of that will reveal will never be anything that has to do with right or wrong or righteous indignation or anything like that, because it will be coming from a place of love. It's completely different. So the decisions I make or the truths, the things that are revealed to me from a meditative state or from a prayerful consciousness are very different than decisions I'm making in life. It's sort of where I get out of the way and I let God just wash the answer over me. And then when the answer comes, it's never uncomfortable because it's pure spirit. So Emmett Fox addressed this. We will be having our last study in the Emmett Fox book, Mental Equivalence, on tomorrow. We have a 10:30 a.m. group and we have a 6 p.m. group. And it's the last chapter. And oh my goodness, by the way, I just wanted to give you a heads up. He ends that book with the most exquisite story. And I didn't want to spoil it for you. I wanted to make sure that you have that experience as you read it on your own and discuss it in your group, because it was real tempting. I was going to tell it because it's such a good story. But you'll have that to look forward to. But I did pull one quote that I wanted to share with you that's very simple, where Emmett Fox is speaking about that process within. And he says this in that final chapter in that book. If you are working from within to the outer, he says from within out, in other words, from the inner to the outer, your work is alive and it will be productive. Whoa, I love that. I love sitting with words like that. If you're working from that withinness, that within place, if that's where you're coming from and you're not dealing with all these exterior factors on the outside, then your work will be alive and it will be productive. And here we are given again this gorgeous opportunity to reflect on all the things we've talked about this month, that way in which growth and expansion and creativity are expressions, natural expressions of that aliveness. And I loved how, I don't know if it was last week or the week before when we had that delicious discussion on bacteria and the perfect climate for bacteria. It's all about the climate. It's all about the environment we create. And I was thinking about that. Somewhere I read you a statistic or a quote that speaks to a sort of the physical truth or the biological truth of all life. And that is, in order to be life, there has to be three qualities for anything, for any living thing, we all share these same three biological functions. And one is we have to have nutrients in order to thrive. You know, in order to survive, you have to be fed. You have to have nutrients. You have to also have a way of letting go of any wastes. Anything that is holding you back, in spiritual study, we say that which no longer serves you. Sometimes it's time to let that stuff go. And finally, the third thing we all have in common is this ability to reproduce. So spiritually speaking, I would say that's about creating more expansion and growth, and that creative ability to reproduce or to produce more is what we're talking about. So we get that in terms of fueling our bodies. If we just took that and didn't look at it at the spiritual metaphor, although it's such a good spiritual metaphor, in terms of the human body, we know we have to then take in, we got to let go, and we got to keep going. You know, it's that simple. Take in, let go, and then keep on going. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. And the difference between humanity and all other forms of life is that we are given this exquisite ability to be aware of that, to be conscious of it, and then to make choices and to work on our own behalf in terms of the good we create. So Fox says, if you are working from within to out, your work is alive and it will be productive because we will be producing, right? So something within us yearns to produce. One more thing before I turn the page. There is this great advice in the last chapter in the Emmett Fox book. He recommends that we all write down on a slip of paper or a little card these words, "The door of the soul opens inward," and that we then carry it around with us. So here's mine. I'm having this one. So as we study growth and expansion, what we begin to see is that increase is natural. It's absolutely normal, a part of that normal process. And what we create grows in as much as how much attention we give it. So it's true in nature, some things in nature really love attention. My garden never looks as good as Annette's, for instance, because she's a master gardener. And she gives, I give a lot of love, but she gives some things I don't know how to give, because I'm busy giving in other ways. But there's a way in which you can see that when the things we nurture or pay attention to will be the things that flourish, and sometimes that means the weeds in our yard get rather prolific. So in the same way, as we're looking at our life, we want to be sure we're plucking out the weeds and not giving attention to the things that we don't want to grow. I found this great quote from Ernest Holmes, taken from that all-time favorite, This Thing Called You. Raise your hand if you've read that book. That is an all-time favorite. Almost every practitioner, if you ask them, what's your favorite book, they'll say, This Thing Called You. And in that in that book, there's this profound line, these few little words that are so striking, they always kind of take my breath away. He says, "Create or perish is the eternal mandate of nature." Create or perish. It is an eternal mandate. And as I pondered that, I immediately reflected on this very scary quotation from the Book of Thomas in the Gnostic Scriptures. This quote, I always misquote it, so I looked it up this morning. The quote from Thomas says, "If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is in you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you." And so what that says to us is that, you know, we've all got gifts. We all have certain callings, things to do in life, places to go. And if we do not follow the divine guidance, it'll end up making you wacky. You know, as Reverend Cheryl would say, you go a little cray-cray, you know? the desires we have, those urges, those yearnings for that intimacy with Spirit must be fed and met, or you will just always be walking around feeling like something is missing. And the problem is, it's not missing, it's always right with us. But the person that is able to recognize it the best has the greatest experience of it. And that's what this teaching is all about. Holmes goes on to say, whatever this thing is, which is seeking expression through everything, it can find satisfactory outlet only through constructive and life-giving creativeness. Oh, I'm going to read that one more time because it's just so yummy. Whatever this thing is, which is seeking expression through everything, it can find satisfactory outlet only through constructive and life-giving creativeness. So there's something else I've noticed about life. There seems to be sort of an ebb and flow of life. You know, I mean, I think the ocean shows us how the tide moves. It comes in and it goes out, and we can see how the seasons change things. And I think the simplest illustration of that would be the way that a tree, even here in the Phoenix Valley, a tree can go dormant for the winter. Our neighbor's tree is dropping leaves faster than I can rake right now. And I don't complain about that because I love the shade that that tree brings us in the summertime, right? But I remember what it looks like, and in a month, or the first big windstorm, whichever comes first, we will have a naked tree that will look very much like it's not alive. And yet, the life is in there. And then when the spring returns, because that's the cyclic nature of life, when the spring comes back, that tree is going to bud out again. And what's going to happen to it? It's going to be so prolific that those little limbs on my side of the wall that I've already trimmed are going to be weighted down and heavy again and hanging over in all their lush and full beauty. Because that's how life is. Growth is expansive. There's always this great increase in nature, so much so that we have to trim our trees. You know, if we don't trim the trees, they get too top-heavy, and here in the desert, they'll blow over. So we try and keep them, and or they'll turn into bushes. They'll turn into giant bushes. It's so interesting. So we trim our trees, and we crop our bushes, and we witness this beautiful insistence of life on the part of life, just trying to express itself in the same way that we attempt to express ourselves in that divine nature. Something just beautiful about that. We actually paid somebody $50 to dig out the old, very overly mature oleander in our front yard. We paid somebody $50 to dig that all out. And within a couple months, that doggone oleander is growing back. It's like these two fresh new little bushes. They're absolutely gorgeous. And so did I do the right thing, Annette? I pulled some dirt away to make a little round thing, you know, and we got the drip system fixed, and now they are flourishing, and I've been deciding, what do I want to put there? Apparently I want to put oleander there. So we will keep it managed because it's young and it's fresh, and because sometimes you got to take out all the old stuff to make it fresh and new and young and beautiful again. Just like the process of life in every way. So this is just natural. So as I mentioned, the rich get richer because they just gravitate towards success. And I think it's because also that they're comfortable with it. Right? Successful people walk around and they look successful. They have an air about them that they're comfortable to be around if we're comfortable with success, of course. If you're not, you won't find yourself very comfortable in their presence. But there's something they get about that natural rhythm. And they don't need somebody to tell them about trees or nature or how the law works. There's something they just innately get that is sort of an instinct inside of them that continually confirms the rightness of the direction they move in. So they could lose everything, and they would just see it as sort of a pruning, probably not in the moment. They, you know, they're us too, right? It's normal to be devastated after a loss, but it's like a pruning that will then help that fresh growth come back even in a more luxurious and gorgeous and healthy way. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about the biblical story from the book of Matthew, the 25th chapter, and it's the very end of that. Well, I don't know. It's around the 29th verse. You get to the whole point of the story. But this is a place in the Bible where Jesus tells a series of parables. He tells these stories. People ask him questions, and he responds by giving a story, and he never quite tells you what the stories mean, and ministers love that because then we can make stuff up and tell it to you with great authority. And you're going to love this one. So in the book of Matthew, Jesus is telling the story of the talents. And the story goes like this. There's a man, a very wealthy man, who has many servants, and he's preparing to leave on a trip, and he's going to be gone for a long time. And so in order to help the servants to be continuing in the work they need to do in his absence, he gives them all talents or certain amounts of money. Let's just call it money. So he gives them whatever that, you know, the equivalent of whatever a talent is. Mark Reed probably has it in his book. You'd want to purchase the book to find out. Don't give it away for free. Okay, well, in the all the scriptures that I use, actually, there's other versions of this story in Mark. I'm using Matthew. You probably favored Mark. I'm just guessing, Mark. In this story, he gives the first servant 5,000 talents. Slightly different version. Probably the same story, though. You know how they repeat. And so he gives the first servant 5,000 talents, and then he goes to the second servant, and he leaves him with 2,000 talents, and he goes to the third servant, and he gives him only 1,000 talents. And what we see from the story is that the master was very thoughtful in how he divvied up the money to each of the servants. He thought very carefully about the amount that would match their skill and their ability to use it. So nobody gets more or less than they can handle. They're given their talents in exact proportion as to what will work for them. The man that had 5,000 talents, master goes away, guy with 5,000 talents invests that money and doubles what the $5,000, what he got. He got 5,000 back. The man that had 2,000 talents did the very same thing, and he as well doubled the money that he was given. But the third man with the 1,000 talents was afraid of the master. He felt like the master was kind of mean and difficult to get along with, and he didn't want to lose any of the master's money. So he buried it in the ground, and he saved it until the master returned. So he had all the money. Well, the master comes back after a long while. Master comes back, and he goes and he checks in with his servants, and he goes to the first and the second servant, and he's very proud of them, and he rewards them greatly for the good work that they did. But then the story concludes by saying when he approached the third servant that he was very angry, and he received no reward at all. And that's how it ends. There's some indication in the study Bible that says, you know, the least he could have done was to give him the money back to the bankers who then would have paid interest on it. But he didn't even do that. He was afraid, so he buried it in the ground. So what we see then is that each of the servants made a choice. And what the purpose of the story brings to us at this point and how it ties in with the message this morning is that we are all given talents. We are all given gifts. We are all given abilities. And we can do good with what we have been given, or we can bury it in the ground. We can think we're not worthy. We can compare our talents and they don't seem as great as someone who has much more talent or ability or creativity than we do. And so we hide it and we let it be small, or we're afraid of losing it, so we protect it. And that is not showing appreciation for the gifts that we have been given. So I think one of the great lessons in this story is that we want to appreciate those gifts that we have been given, those talents or innate abilities where we are called to shine in some special way that is uniquely ours, and we need to use it. When we do, we are standing in that same place that the really successful person stands in. And I call that my sweet place. Right? We're standing in that place where we feel that natural rhythm, that vibration of life, that movement of life. And it is that divine movement. It's not just us trying to figure out life. We have found our groove in that perfect and divine place. So what I love about what we teach here is that in every class you take, we're going to encourage you to figure out what your talents and your gifts are. We're going to talk about it. We're going to ask you. We're going to invite you to play in that place, because when you find your sweet place and you stand in it, you are in touch with all the creative energy of the universe. And magnificent things happen from that sweet place. There's a wonderful quotation, you may find this familiar, from Howard Thurman, who said, "Do not ask what the world needs, but ask what makes you come alive, and then go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." Oh, somehow we know this to be true. You know, we know that. We love being around people who have been given a talent and they are willing to stand in front of us and share that gift, and then we have that experience of feeling it, of experiencing it. Music is such a good illustration of that. You know, the Stompers, I don't see Dean and Joanne today. I think they're off some Thanksgiving adventure, no doubt. But, you know, Dean plays the tuba with this Dixieland jazz band called the Stompers, and they rehearse here on Fridays. And when I come in, and usually nobody else is in the building, so I will open that door so that I can hear them, because they come right up here and they rehearse. And I love listening to them. It's a group of men. Sometimes they have a woman pianist, but mostly men. And they come together and they know how to play their instruments. And they know that when they play together, that one instrument will complement the sound of another instrument. And so they play a song all the way through, and then they get done, and then I can tell they're talking. I can't really hear what they're saying, but I can hear them talking, and they're regrouping. Then all of a sudden, they'll take a piece, either right in the middle, or maybe it's the end, and then they do that little piece again and again and again and again until they're satisfied that they got it right. Does that sound like practicing music? Right? And then they make this gorgeous sound when they get all their instruments in tune together, and they make music. So it's a really good illustration to us. How do we take our instrument? You know, we are that instrument. Lord, make me an instrument of fill in the blank, that beautiful St. Francis prayer. And we take our gifts and then we polish them up so that Spirit can use us, so that we can thrive, so we can be a part of that creative expression in the way that Spirit intended us to be. And I think that describes spiritual community as well. We've been looking at stewardship all month long, and there's a way that we come together now. We come together so that we can worship and be touched by the music or the prayer or the message, whatever it is, that we can enjoy each other's company. We come to learn. Sometimes we come because we're frightened or we're not feeling well and we want to be uplifted. We come for all different reasons. But when we come together, we also bring our talents. You know, sometimes your talent might just be your presence. The way you know how to sit and listen, or you just have that knack to say the perfect thing at the perfect time. I never got that. I have to. That's why I do platform better than conversation. It's like, but there's something so gorgeous about that. Now, I want to tell you, and this is the way I dreamed we could conclude this stewardship program. We put our three circles together, and I'll tell you something. When I sat in that meeting, I don't know, I volunteered to create the board. We put the image of the circles together, and I said, I think I can pull that off. I'm going to make the board. So as I was taking these circles and trying to cover them with fabric and sitting patiently doing all of that, and I started to lay them out on the table together, I noticed something intriguing and wonderful. This is a Venn diagram. This is what, how many of you know about Venn diagrams? Ooh, a lot of you do. So a Venn diagram is typically, well, I made one here. You won't be able to see it very well, so I'm going to walk through here. So I got on my computer, I opened a Word document, and I went into, just for the heck of it, I went into clip art. No, not even publisher. I wouldn't know how. I went into clip art and I typed in Venn diagram because I've been doing some work on the Venn diagram. Now, what I want you to notice about the Venn diagram is when three circles come together, there's an intersecting place in the middle. Do you see that? There's a place in the middle, and I took a big felt marker to highlight it so that you could see it really well, because I think it looks like a gem. It looks like a gem. I think that's where the treasure is right in the middle. Now, in the business world, the Venn diagram is used as a business model to illustrate the way things come together and connect. And so if a business is thinking about developing a new product, I'm just making this part up. It was easier than Googling it and giving you facts. So let's say a group of business partners want to bring their businesses together because they have a vision of some unique product that they can create because they bring skills. So they look at three areas. So let's just say one is their expertise. They've got all this life experience, so they have an expertise and knowledge in a certain way. Another might be some very important skills that would be needed in designing whatever that product would be. And the third is that they happen to have a good contact for all the best resources they would need to create the product. So they put those three circles out, and then they write down in each, okay, so this is our expertise. What expertise do we have? And between the three of them, they list all their expertise. And then they list all the possible resources, and they list all the great skills they have. And then when you put it together, when you look at it together, there's a place in the middle that's like a gem. Just like this. I made one for us. Mine lights up. Can you see how mine lights up? I made mine light up. So the center, then, is a gem. And I think it looks like a heart. And I was thinking about that center being that sweet place. We can take our gifts and we can do good in the world, or we can bury our gifts and never use them. And I, for one, have always wanted to bring my gifts as best I could and find that balance into knowing what's mine and what's not mine. And as it turns out, every great thing I think of, somebody else already thought of. But that's okay. What I know is nobody called it a sweet place before. So that's mine. And for me, that sweet place then is the recognition, acknowledging that you got something. Acknowledging it, appreciating it, using it. And some of the ways we help you figure out what yours is would be by asking yourself, what gives me purpose in life? What gives me meaning? What makes my life matter? How is it that I show up and I have something to give? And when do I feel joy? When do I feel the most content and satisfied with my life? And I will tell you that it will always be from your sweet place. It'll be that sweet spot. It'll be right in the center because it is the heart, the very heart, the nature of the center of who we are. It's a God-given gift. You know, they tell us, we say all the time that the grace of God is pouring, streaming always into our lives. We're talking about relationship. How does one gift relate to another gift? How does that relate to who I am and what I've been called to do in this life? A gentleman named Frederick Buechner said, and you may recognize this quote. I totally know this quote. I did not know that name. The place that God calls you to, that's the place where your deep gladness meets the world's deep hunger. See, that has to be true. That has to be true because that is how we are created. He also says your true vocation, I almost said vacation, your true vocation is where your greatest joy meets the world's need. And he's sort of famous for all of that in motivational, especially occupational relatedness. So what happens when we stand in the middle of our own life? What would happen if you made your own Venn diagram and in one circle you wrote down all your skills, all the things you have really mastered in life through the jobs you've had, you know, the stuff you have learned, what you've studied, all your skills. And in another circle, what would happen if we then listed our, I really challenge you, this is the work we do in Prac 1, we're going to call it, what are we calling it? I don't know. Advanced Science of Mind. This is the kind of work we'll be doing in that class. You look at all your life's experience, all your life's, not just the stuff you liked. Because you know why? The stuff we don't like grows us often more than the stuff we like. And so what if we took our experience and laid it all out and began to recognize our expertise from the lessons we have learned as we have lived our lives? All right, so now you have your skills, you have your expertise, and what if in the third circle you listed the things that make you really happy? What brings you joy? And then you take those three lists, this is what I do in my life, and you put them together and you look for that sweet spot, you look for that gem. You look for that place where you will be creatively ignited to do what you have been called to do as you walk this life in your little human experience. Because that's where the divine alignment is. That's the perfect pattern that I am always talking about. That's that vibrational, energetic place where we shine, where we're so clear about who we are and what we are and whose we are. I think it happens because we are rich in spirit when we stand in that place, and therefore we understand we are living the truth that the rich get richer. You, my friends, each one of you are the sweet center of this community. your gifts, your talents, your expertise intersect, connect, and make a precious gem. That also means that you are the heart. And so I thank you for helping us to create a beautiful stewardship program. I thank you for seeing the value in our focus to create a financially healthy and stable and thriving center, that we can keep our resources flowing, that we can guarantee that this center will be here in the years to come for all the people that will come after us. I am grateful for that and for so much more. We are wrapping up the stewardship program. It is not too late to fill out a stewardship card, to sign your name. I notice when I sign my name to it, it changes it. It gives it something so real for me that I know I'm participating in something very wonderful, because I am then a part of the heart too. I'd like to call all of the practitioners forward at this time, and we will anchor these ideas in those precious words of prayer. So just take a breath and get comfortable where you are seated. And we'll just take this time to allow all the ideas, all the intellectual discussion, we allow the words to just fall about this room, knowing that something will land right in our lap. That's something that was just for me. And you will know what that is for you. And as we turn within, I just recognize that there is a power that is greater than we are. It is the infinite wisdom of all the universe. It is all the harmony, the perfect order. It is the joy, and it is the love. Love. Love as the most powerful force in the universe. I feel the love of God within me. And I sense the movement, the activity, the creativity, the immense divine potential. I feel the love of God, and I know that as it is that activity of life, it is present, it is active in each person sitting in this sanctuary, and in every living thing. It is that intelligence that breathes our lungs and pumps our hearts and moves our blood through our very own circulatory system, so that we recognize the divine nature of even our own humanity. I feel the love of God, and I know it is that beautiful way in which relationships are harmonized. That as we find our rhythm in this movement, as we recognize that divine pattern and we stand in the truth of our own success, of our own well-being, of our own prosperity, something changes in our lives. Something shifts. And there is a vibrancy inside that has a healing power that we have yet to experience. And it is strong, and it is amplified through the words of this prayer, so that we each stand aligned in that place where we find our sweet spot, where we sense the divine guidance, where we know a higher truth for our own life. And so every activity that we partake in this week is amply blessed. Every decision we make is guided. Every exchange and encounter we have with another human being is sealed with the sweet kiss of God, that which has kissed us so sweetly, we have inspired that breath and we have that experience of life itself. So I'm so grateful to know that this is the way that God works. That this is that divine law, that it doesn't matter how intellectual we are in the way we discuss it or how we pray or how we meet other people. We simply are living in this spirit of union, of oneness, of great divine balance. And therefore, life is good, and we can affirm that, and we can open our arms to receive our good. For we are vessels. We are instruments. Lord, concerning the work of these hands, use me. And as we awaken to our own call, we know that everything we need to serve in this life, everything we need is given freely. I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. I am so grateful to be a part of a community that is so richly blessed that together we can share this deep and meaningful gratitude. And in that spirit of full thankfulness in this Thanksgiving season, I release the words of this prayer, and I allow them to be, and together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.